RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the July 15th, 2020 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Ford. Of course, we are coming in off the heels of UFC 251. Of course, we got two UFC Fight Night cards coming up this week. On Wednesday, which is the day this show comes out, we have the UFC Fight Night Cater versus Ige card. And then on Saturday, we've got UFC Fight Night. Well, I guess it's Figueiredo versus Benavidez. We'll talk about that as we go on. But Daniel, about, 2 a.m. on Sunday morning following East Coast time, following UFC 251, something I always like to do, I go into my phone notes and I just start kind of writing down some thoughts I have about the card. And, you know, the very first thing that I wrote was, I wonder how a hardcore fan viewed the fight as opposed to a casual sports fan, even talk about the co-main event. So I send this to you and you go, you know what? I was actually watching the fights with some casual fans.
Yeah, I was watching the fights with some casual fans. And, the co-main event wasn't the most boring fight for the casual fans. I thought that they enjoyed it quite a bit. But obviously the main event was a bit of a doozy. And my circumstance was unique in that it was very much just not a great environment to watch that main event. The reason being is I get home. And I buy the pay-per-view, the friends are coming over, and right before they're going to come over, I get a call to come into work for a couple hours. And so I go to work, I tell my friend Micah, hey Micah, I got to work, you mind coming at 10:30 my time to come watch the pay-per-view? So we start the pay-per-view at 10:30 my time, 11:30 Eastern. By the time we get to the main event, it's 2 a.m. So we're watching this main event at 2 a.m. It's just the worst possible environment to watch Usman clinch Masvidal against the cage.
Yeah, I mean, that was, one of the things of Kamaru Usman is a dominating, he's a great fighter. You know, you have to mention that about him. A lot of respect, I think, from the hardcore fans and people who've been around the sport. That's, I think, for the most part, going to be their thought about Kamaru Usman. But it is a fighting style that is not the funnest thing to watch. And to me, as you know, obviously the report came out of 1.3 million pay-per-view buys. Dana White was asked about that number on Tuesday, and he would not confirm nor deny the report. I think it pretty much tells you that's the number it was. And to me, I feel Kamaru Usman missed out on a huge opportunity to grow his brand.
Yeah, it's a huge audience. There really aren't that many pay-per-views that do a buy rate that big. And honestly, the 1.3 million buy rate surprised me, especially because there's the idea that on ESPN Plus, there's just a natural harder barrier to entry that's maybe brought down the pay-per-view buy rates. But for UFC 251 to do such a big number reportedly, that's a hell of an opportunity for Kamaru Usman to use it as a launching platform. And this performance didn't do that. I mean, way more people know about Usman now than beforehand. But it wasn't the type of performance that communicated to people that I need to watch Kamaru Usman fight again. It was just a very boring fight. I mean, I think for a lot of casual fans watching this fight, the majority of them thought, damn, he's really good at stomping his foot. But that was like the most intriguing aspect of this fight. All the credit to Kamaru. He went up there against a new challenger in short notice, and he completely and totally dominated Jorge Masvidal. This was a champion defending his title for the second time, and he won in convincing fashion. So all the credit to him. He's an incredibly skilled fighter. He displayed that he's a great welterweight champion. In terms of the nuts and bolts of business, his star elevated just because this was such a big event. But there's a big potential that was not seized upon because this performance wasn't particularly great. And again, this is a guy who is a wrestler. I wouldn't consider him a totally boring fighter given the fact that he's had some great fights. His fight against Colby Covington was like a fight of the year in 2019. His fight against Rafael Dos Anjos was entertaining. But this is a guy who has the ability to fight safe when he's threatened, and that could be boring. And that's why his star is probably not where it should be.
he's a dominating world champion. I think you cannot deny that. But you know, but I don't. Will he ever be a popular fighter? Will he be a fighter that can, you know, draw an audience like a Conor McGregor, a Ronda Rousey, a Brock Lesnar, a Jorge Masvidal? No, he's not that fighter. But he is, you know, he is well on his way to potentially becoming the greatest UFC welterweight champion of all time. You know, I don't know, you know who could potentially dethrone him. Maybe that's Gilbert Burns. Maybe that's Leon Edwards. You know, and Dana White, after it said Gilbert Burns is going to be next. And I think it's a matter of, you know, how soon does Kamar Usman want to get back in there? That fight happens. You know, as you watch that fight on Saturday night, you can't help but think of, if that was Gilbert Burns in there, it makes you wonder, would he have done better than Jorge Masvidal did? I mean, look, Jorge Masvidal once again showed how good his takedown defense is, did well, but there was really never a moment in the fight that I was like, oh, he's going to knock him out, he's going to win. I mean, to me, it was very clear. I gave the first round to Jorge Masvidal, but, you know, rounds two through five, no question, they were Kamar Usman rounds. And, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. I mean, you got Leon Edwards just sitting out there. You know, he's won 8 in a row, but, I mean, how do you, because of what he has done in 2020, I don't know how you deny Gilbert Burns the title shot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you got to talk to Ariel Helwani about that. I know he's got a beef with Ali Abdelaziz for suggesting that Burns needs to fight Leon Edwards. And Ali says, hey, all my talent's not going to be on the worldwide leader of sports because that's, you know, I'm a good manager, right? Yeah. Okay. Get the hell out of here, Ali Abdelaziz. But Leon, certainly, you feel bad for him, but also he's been given opportunities. Like, he's been offered championship fights. And I know he has good reasons not to take them, but he also hasn't taken them. Gilbert Burns has taken every single opportunity that's been offered to him. He took this fight. He could not, obviously, fight, but it was taken out of his hands. So, for Leon, he certainly deserves a title fight. I don't think he deserves the next one, though. I think Gilbert Burns rightfully deserves the next title fight. He really, really, really blossomed into a worthy contender. He continued to step up time and again, and I think he probably should be rewarded. And I guess for Kamaru Usman, who does have a chance to be, you know, potentially the greatest welterweight champion of all time, it's going to be a longer road, though. I mean, George St. Pierre has set the bar incredibly high. For Kamaru to be considered the best welterweight of all time, that means he will be in consideration for the best fighter of all time. It's going to take multiple dominant defenses. Kamaru's on his way. But what this fight illustrated was, if you're going to get an interesting Kamaru Usman fight, it's likely going to be against a fighter who is a very good either grappler or wrestler, so he can nullify some of those aspects of Kamaru's game. Masvidal wasn't able to do that. Burns certainly can. And that's what makes that fight interesting. So I am all aboard Usman and Burns.
Yeah, the Ali Abdelaziz tweet directed at ESPN MMA was my SMH moment of the week. For those who did not see what he had to say, he goes, all ESPN MMA, you have been banned from talking to any dominance fighters because you have a reporter who's targeting my champions. You need an immediate investigation for corruption today. I love what ESPN MMA brings to the table. They have great reporters, Brett Okamoto, Mark Romandi, Jeff Wagenheim. I have no issue with these guys, but enough is enough. Also, TSN is on the ban list. When I saw this, Daniel, my first thought was, this is a guy who he's got a personal vendetta, clearly against Ariel Helwani, and he is putting that over what's best for his fighters. I saw that and I'm like, if I'm a fighter represented by Ali Abdelaziz, I literally call him up and I go, let me get this straight. You want me to not do an interview with the worldwide leader in sports coverage because you don't like him? That to me showed, it said a lot about Ali Abdelaziz. And if you're a dominance MMA fighter, I mean, look, I've told this to people in the past. If I was representing a fighter or I worked for a promotion and I wanted to break news, I'm going to Ariel Helwani because he's got the biggest platform in the game. I just saw that, Daniel, and I'm just like, I felt bad for the fighters that are represented by Ali. I mean, look, clearly Ali does a lot of great things for his fighters, gets them, you know, big money fights, gets them in the big, big fights as well. But I was just like, man, that is just very telling about where your interest in your manager lies.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, come on. This is very much an immature action by Ali. And it just reminds you of some of the worst personalities we see in the world today, right? Like these people who pick and choose battles with the media. It's like, what are you doing? Like you're an adult. You're a manager. This isn't high school. And your decision is directly impacting so many of your clients, because even though it's not meteoric, every single interview you do on a platform that has a big audience slowly but surely improves your stock, introduces you to another fan, increases your influence, which increases the amount of dollars in your bank account. It's just a short-sighted tactic that doesn't seem justified or warranted based on the offense of Ariel. It's something where this isn't about what Ariel said or suggested. This is more about Ali not liking him based on their history. And it's just a head-scratching moment for sure, where it just feels kind of cult-like.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I just sat there and look, I know Ali doesn't care for me, which doesn't really matter to me. Look, it's not the first time in this sport that a manager hasn't wanted his athletes get interviewed by somebody, but it's just one of those things of I just look at it from a fighter's aspect. I look from the fighter side of it, thinking, man, if you're someone like a Gilbert Burns or even a Kamaru Usman, like, man, you want to be interviewed by ESPN because it's the biggest platform there is. Of course, I think one of the bigger news stories, Daniel, to come out of UFC 251 is, some questionable judges scoring, in terms of obviously the co-main event, which I thought was a close fight. I would not use the robbery term. I think that, when I look at bad scorecards, I look at the 30-27 of Muslim Salikov against Zaliki Dos Santos. I don't see how you score that fight 30-27. To me, it's 29-28 either way. You look at Mark Goddard's performance in the first fight on the TV prelims of Leonardo Santos and Roman Bogatov, where Leonardo Santos literally is throwing every punch he has. Bogatov pretty much is out on his feet. Then, of course, later on, we have Roman Bogatov decides, I guess we'll call it accidental shots to the groin, and then an illegal shot where he takes 2 points away. The Paiva Zhumagulov fight, I think the judges got the scorecards in that one as well. But, you know, talking about that co-main event of Volkanovski and Holloway, before we get into it, Daniel, I want to play what John McCarthy said on his podcast, because, he was pretty fired up about the officials working UFC 251.
This is where I have a problem, and the UFC, they're responsible for the people that are their officials there. This isn't the British Mixed Martial Arts Council that is doing the inspector job and things. It's the UFC. You pick some really bad people to be your judges because they do not have the levels that it takes to be in the position they are and to judge some of those fights, because the Volkanovski fight was not that hard of a fight to judge.
Yeah,
Max was tooling him in the beginning of that fight. I'll give Volkanovski coming on in the end. Okay. But there's no way that he won three rounds of that fight. Did not happen. Impossible. Sorry. I don't know what the hell you're looking at. I wrote the rules that you go by for your criteria, and you're not freaking following them.
Whoa. Daniel, I think that's about the best way to describe that that clip there.
Yeah, yeah, Big John. I love Big John. I love his energy. And it's a great way to drop the mic when you're like, I wrote these rules. You know, I'm a big fan of Big John. I thought it was a solid take. I got a question, though. Yes, they did bring in some judges who were kind of inexperienced. Only a few with a lot of UFC experience, but not many. But the one hole in John's argument is that he talks about how clearly it was Max Holloway won three rounds. That's literally not the case. Yes, you scored this fight under Pride rules. Max Holloway had a much bigger gap than Volkanovski in rounds one and two. And 3 through 5 were close. 1 and 2 really weren't. Those are Max's rounds. You do Pride Rules. Max won this decision. But even though I scored this fight for Max Holloway, I can understand people watching that fight and scoring 3, 4, and 5 for Volkanovski. Those were close rounds. Volkanovski landed more strikes looking at the CompuStrike data than I actually understood. So even though Max Holloway should be the champion in my mind, I'm not up in arms about it, and I'm being a bit more realistic with my criticism of the judges in this particular fight because it is understandable how Volkanovski gets awarded this decision. 3, 4, and 5, those all could have been scored 10-9 for Alexander Volkanovski.
It was a close fight. I think we can, you know, by no way is this fight a robbery. And, you know, we talked about, you know, how the hardcore fan view things and how the, you know, casual fan views thing, you know, just because I follow a lot of people in the traditional sports world. And I tell you, all of them were saying, oh, what, you know, Max Holloway got robbed. By no stretch do I think Max Holloway got robbed. I thought it's a very close fight. One of the interesting things when you look at the scorecards, what I found really interesting was the fact that all three judges all saw they had the same scores round 1, 2, 3, and 4. All of them gave the first two rounds to Max Holloway, and then Mark Collette gave rounds 3, 4, and 5 to Volkanovski. Dave Letterby gave the third and fourth round to Volkanovski, fifth round to Holloway, and Clemens Warren gave rounds 3, 4, and 5 to Volkanovski, and of course the first two rounds of Holloway. I thought it really came down to the third round, Daniel. I thought that was the round that, to me, was kind of the questionable round, you know, in terms of the fight. I didn't see the fifth round. I thought clearly rounds 1 and 2 were Holloway. I thought 3 was a toss up, and then I thought rounds 4 and 5 were Volkanovski rounds.
Yeah, I totally am in agreement with you, and I think it was that transition round, but that's interesting that you bring that up, and we're kind of in simpatico with how we digested this fight. I watched this fight, and I thought, man, Max Holloway is going to get the featherweight championship again. It might be a longer road back now that he's lost back-to-back fights to Volkanovski. I know he's in danger of being in the Uriah Faber, the Joseph Benavidez zone, right, where you lose a couple times to a champion and then you're just the best fighter in the weight class without the strap. But I get the sense that Holloway's going to be champion again. He did a much better job than Volkanovski of adjusting based on their first fight. Volkanovski eventually started working the leg kicks, but they were not as big a factor as they were in the first. Obviously, eventually, I mean, Max's leg was redder than Elmo's butt hair, but it took a while for Volkanovski to utilize the leg kicks, and I think that was a big reason why Max was in control in rounds 1 and 2. So those two rounds really made me think, even though he's faced a lot of adversity, this guy, Holloway, has a chance to reclaim the featherweight championship in 2021. So it's a tough loss for him, but I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. For Volkanovski, despite winning, I'm like, damn, this guy's championship is definitely vulnerable. This was a pretty bad performance compared to how excellent he was. I mean, at the end of the day, you go in there, you defend your featherweight championship, it wasn't a bad performance. But relative to what we saw in his last performance, this was certainly a step back for Volkanovski, but he's still the champ, and he's got to be proud of himself for that.
Look, I would not have a problem if the UFC ran it back for a third straight time. I would have no problem if they did that. Now, I do not believe they're going to do that. I think that I would imagine that it's Zabit, maybe the winner of Ortega, Korean Zombie. I think it all depends on when Volkanovski wants to come back. I have an idea of who I think Holloway should fight next if it happens the way I think it's going to happen. Give me Max Holloway, and if Calvin Kattar wins on Wednesday night.
Oh, that's a great fight. That's a great fight, man. I would be so down for that. That's a tough fight for Holloway. But because Calvin, the way Calvin's been fighting lately, and if he beats Dan Ige, which is, no guarantee, I mean, that's an absolute killer who's on a collision course for a championship fight. But that's a great fight, man. I mean, you put Max Holloway in there with anyone, whether it be a rematch against a top featherweight or a fresh matchup like the one you mentioned against Calvin Kattar. Like, sign me up. But I think for Holloway, the next move for him is that number one contenders type fight. Because you're right, you could go with a trilogy fight. That does seem a bit played out. The fact that Holloway's lost three of his last four isn't great. And also, maybe you're going to want to wait until you can do this fight in either Hawaii or you do the fight in Australia with a crowd for the trilogy. So you might want to wait. And I totally dig what you're putting down with the possibility of a Calvin Kattar fight.
Now, ideally, if I was going to play UFC matchmaker, I would want to see someone go out and earn the title shot. So I would do Zabit Magomedov-Sharipov versus Yair Rodriguez and Brian Ortega versus Chan Sung Jung. And then whoever has the most impressive win, they get Volkanovski.
Yeah. I think between those two guys, we're going to see someone step up. Look, if Peter Yan wasn't going to face Jose Aldo and that the fight was announced after the Gaethje-Ferguson pay-per-view, it would have been Yan versus Sterling, I think. And I think a guy in those two matchups could jump out as like the no-brainer solution. You know, Aljo is the no-brainer bantamweight contender. Right now, there is no no-brainer guy at 145. There's plenty of talented cats, plenty of intriguing matchups, but I'm digging what you're saying. Let somebody make that statement performance, get that finish, that convincing decision that established themselves as the most legitimate 145-pound challenger. There are plenty of talented cats in the division, but there still isn't a clear focus on who is a no-brainer, no doubt about it. You got to guarantee him a fight. Let Volkanovski chill out a little bit.
Bro, you say it's a brainer for Aljo to fight Peter Yan. Dana White might have a little different thought process on that.
Marlon Moraes said that he has accepted a fight with Cody Garbrandt in October. Does that leave the path open for Aljamain Sterling to get a title shot at Peter Yan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We haven't pulled that trigger yet.
But would there be anyone else in that division apart from Sterling that makes a logical choice right now?
I don't know. I'm not even thinking about that. If you guys ask me about any other fighters or any other fights, I'm not even there.
Dude, how is Aljo not next for the bantamweight title? Come on, Dana.
I know Marlon Moraes is above Aljamain Sterling in the rankings, but the dude, it was a close decision to Jose Aldo, whereas Aljamain Sterling went up against, by all accounts, number one contenders fight against Corey Sandhagen, and he just like a 90-second victory. Obviously, I think if those two guys rematch, the fight will be closer. But that was like a holy crap, give the guy the opportunity. Now he's 1-5 straight. I know he got flash knocked out by Marlon, but Aljo's the rightful number one contender. I don't get it. I don't get why Dana's playing coy. Like, he doesn't always announce things or at least allude to them or openly talk about potential fights in the post-fight presser. You're right to take that clip and be like, man, when there's smoke, there's fire. And that's usually the case with Dana White. So it's interesting. I don't know where they would go if they're not going. I mean, are they going with like, I mean, I guess the obvious one is gotta be, if Marlon's, you know, out of the fight against Cody Garbrandt, maybe Dana's like, Cody Garbrandt's a star. Let's just put him against Peter Yan.
Bro, no.
I mean, you say no, but we just saw Aldo fight for the title, and before that, Dominic Cruz did. So it seems like in the bantamweight division, the only way you can get a championship fight is if you're a former champion or a headliner.
Yeah, I mean, it did come out that Marlon Moraes has tested positive for COVID-19, so he's another fighter in South Florida who's tested positive. Of course, we know Pedro Munhoz. He tested positive. He was supposed to fight on Wednesday night. However, that fight now is a part of the August pay-per-view. I mean, look, it should be Aljo. I mean, look, Peter Yan. My wife was sitting on the couch with me on Saturday night watching these fights. And look, my wife is by no stretch an MMA fan. I think that she's probably just sitting there because that's what I've been doing pretty much every Saturday night is watching fights on the couch. And she looked at me and she goes, what is it going to take for the ref to stop this fight?
Yeah, it was a very long time that Jan was beating down on Aldo. And not to take away from the fact that Jose Aldo performed really well in rounds 1 through 3, by the way. Like, really well. That was a technical chess match. That fight wasn't super exciting for the casual fan, actually, but it was to me. And obviously, Jan kind of turned it on, but we saw Aldo start utilizing those leg kicks. But again, the story of this fight is the fact that we saw Jose Aldo get beat and beat and beat and beat and beat again. Beat again. Beat again like a damn tortilla that my grandmother makes. It was nasty. It was consistent. I think maybe the reason why the referee didn't step in is twofold. It's a championship fight. And there was never that, like, authoritative domination from Jan. It was very consistently, like, punishing. But it wasn't, like, authoritative, like, boom, boom, boom. Like, you know, it was very much like, I'm going to hit you. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And oh my gosh, you're not really defending yourself. So, I get why until, like, you know, it went about 2 minutes too long. But it, I guess it was just that Jan didn't, like, put that authoritative stamp on it. But as soon as that fight's over, you're just like, damn, that thing should have been stopped 2 minutes earlier.
Exactly. The fight went on, you know, 2 minutes longer than it needed to be. In that fifth round, Peter Jan landed 62 out of 68 significant strikes.
Unbelievable. I mean, Aldo was literally defending as if he was a punching bag. I mean, the one thing he was doing was keeping his, a punching bag defense better?
He threw 120 strikes in the fifth round, landing 113.
That's going to improve his accuracy, I believe, Jason. That's unbelievable.
It's just one of those things of, like, you could just see Aldo was done. And like you said, it lasted 2 minutes longer than it needed to be. But great point you bring up. Aldo did look good. And when I think about what's next for Jose Aldo, the fight that sticks out to me, and I think this could be a fight night main event or a very solid addition, you know, second, third type fight on a pay-per-view. How about Jose Aldo versus Dominic Cruz?
Yeah, I think that fight makes a lot of sense. It's a nice throwback of your power ranking the greatest lighterweight fighters of all time. Aldo and Cruz are a part of that list, and it's a nice legacy matchup against fighters who are still relevant to this division. Aldo still performed well against, you know, by all accounts and purposes, Jose Aldo has gone 3 really good rounds against both the number one guy in the contenders and the champion in this division. So he still has a chance to become champion again. It seems a bit far-fetched given his age and again, guys like Sterling that are part of the mix, but it's a possibility. And Dom Cruz, I think he's really close to falling off a ledge, but he just hasn't done it yet. This just feels like the perfect time to do this type of fight. And you're right in that Cruz versus Aldo, despite both being on skids, that's still a main event caliber fight because of all the investment the UFC has put in these fighters over the years. These are names to fans. These are guys people know, and it's still a relevant fight. I do think this is perfect. I think for these guys, you're either looking at these types of fights or fights where they're going up against the young guns they can elevate to the next level. Aldo, though, is still performing, especially in those first 3 rounds, at a great level. And again, I just think it's a great sign that he's kind of gone back to the leg kicks. That was a bit surprising that we kind of saw that outside of his diet lately, but I'm glad he was able to reintroduce that.
I got a question for you, Daniel. Henry Cejudo's retired, right?
No, he's not retired. The question is, who does he fight? And why does he watch every UFC, by the way? Every UFC, he's got a tweet.
I mean, it's like, he's getting worse than Conor McGregor.
I know.
Except no one's writing tweets about anytime he tweets.
Yeah, he isn't as big of a needle shaker, needle mover as Conor is. But look, this dude's coming back. This dude is absolutely coming back. He wants to fight again. It's only a matter of time. And I guess the big question is, which division will it be in?
I would imagine 35. I mean, look, I think from the UFC's aspect, if he wants to come back, and even if he wants it at 45, I think the UFC is going to sit there and say, you know, we need you to commit that this is not a one fight and done type thing. You know, they're not going to just let him go, you know, fight for a 45-pound title. I mean, look, if Cejudo Yan, they would do that fight, I mean, that's a fight that does interest me, but I'm just sitting there on fight night going, this guy allegedly retired, what, 45, 60 days ago? But you look at his social media, doesn't come off as a guy who's retired, and it's just kind of like, okay, Henry, like, you know, I don't know if he's just trying to, he knows he's coming back, and he's just trying to keep his name, you know, in the public eye, but I just thought that. I was like, come on, Henry.
Yeah.
Of course, the opening fight of the night, we saw Amanda Ribas just, I mean, she wrecked Paige Van Zandt. No surprise there. We'll talk about Amanda Ribas here in a moment, but Dana White, after the event was over, he was asked about the free agency of Paige Van Zandt.
I like Paige. You know, It's like Blades when I talk, you know, when Blades fought last year, when you talk all that stuff, I'm not being paid enough, and you know, fighting inconsistently, you know, one time in the last year, injuries, and then got smoked in the first round of the fight. She should definitely test free agency.
Daniel, when I heard that comment, it said to me that Dana White is telling Paige Van Zandt and her management team, we wish you well in your future endeavors.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're anticipating that they're not going to match whatever offer she gets from another promotion, and it makes sense. I mean, Paige provides value to whoever is going to pay for her. I mean, even though Amanda Ribas completely and totally outclassed her, and I guess she justified the large betting odds that she was given. Yeah, I had questions about it, but Ribas answered those questions. She deserved to be that big of a favorite, apparently. And it'll be good to see her drop back down to her natural weight class. Even though Ribas dominated Paige, Van Zandt is still the story coming out of this fight, which is a big reason why she is valuable to a promotion. But for the UFC, when they're kind of pinching pennies, this isn't a fighter that they will likely want to retain given the offers that she'll get somewhere else. The talent isn't there for her to compete among the best in the UFC.
I mean, look, obviously, I would expect that she ends up in Bellator. I mean, that makes all sense. I think it makes sense for her. It makes sense for Bellator. They're looking for noble challengers for Alima Leigh McFarlane. And I think if you said Paige Van Zandt versus Alima Leigh McFarlane is headlining a show in Hawaii, that's going to be a big event for them. You know, I don't know if she would get more guaranteed money than she's currently getting from the UFC. Maybe she gets a little bit of a pay bump, but I think Paige is one of those fighters that if you put her outside the UFC, which then you don't have the UFC branding, but I think that she would be able to probably make a good killing on sponsorships. I mean, because look, when you see a fighter on their Instagram page and, you know, they're touting whatever brand it may be, and they're saying, hey, use my promo code. I'm sure with her, it's probably Paige or Paige VZ or something along those lines. It allows that advertiser to see, hey, are we getting a return on our investment? You know, it's either, it's one of two type of deals. It's either, you know, a regular deal where, you know, she's being paid a flat rate, or she's getting paid a commission on that rate, which, you know, most people would call an affiliate deal, which is something I don't personally do. But I know plenty of people out there do those deals. So I think that for Paige, I mean, you know, she's not going to be a UFC champion. I mean, I think that's very clear. You know, when she walked to the octagon on Saturday and she was emotional, that was kind of telling to me. It made me wonder, is it emotions of I'm finally here, I'm finally competing again after all the injuries? Was the emotion of I know this is my last fight in the UFC and I have no idea what my future is?
I mean, that could be it. This is a really tough time for anyone to be a free agent in any business or industry. I mean, obviously before the pandemic, it's just a different ballgame. I mean, the UFC is right now the only ballgame in town. I know we're going to talk later about some promotions coming back. I know 1FC announced they're coming back and they're coming back. But I mean, it's a very uncertain time. We have no idea when the economy is going to rebound. Mixed martial arts is a sport, bro, that like 100% is related to the economy of this country. If the economy of this country is bad, people will not buy tickets. People will not buy pay-per-views. They will not spend money on the sport, and that will take away money from these promotions. So this is just the worst time ever for Paige to be a free agent. So that could be it. I think just a real sense of disappointment. I mean, you feel bad for her. I mean, just the look on her face, bro, when the hands were raised, it just felt like, you were watching like your family member, like just do really poorly in a eighth grade basketball game, you know, just get dunked on or the turn the ball over. Like how I imagine my parents were in the stands watching me strike out every time playing baseball. That's how I felt whenever this fight was over, just the disappointment on her face, because I think I feel bad for her because this is a fighter with a lot of pressure and a big time expectations. And she was thrown to the wolves by the UFC. They knew this was the last fight on her deal, and they put her in a really bad spot against a fighter in Amanda Ribas, who's going to challenge for the Women's Strawweight Championship in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear that, you know, Paige, she works her tail off to get here. But, you know, I think in terms of the UFC, I mean, is she ever going to crack the top five? I think the answer to that question is no. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see, can she get more suitors for her services, you know, besides Bellator? You know, maybe the UFC, maybe they just have a price. And the price that Paige won is just nowhere in there. But we'll see what happens there. But, you know, of course, Amanda Ribas, we talk about, you know, stars that come out of this. I think two fighters you look at it is Amanda Ribas and also Yuri with that win over Volkan Ozdemir, which, you know, there were times in that fight, I'm just sitting there going, bro, Yuri, I know this is your style, bro, but man, can we throw a little boxing defense up there? And you brought up this question, and I'll give my take in and we'll get yours, where you said, who are we buying more stock in, Ribas or Yuri? Give me Ribas just because when I look at Yuri and that light heavyweight division, if he doesn't start fighting with more defense, I just think the top of that division will eat him alive.
Yeah, that defense was bad. And you also maybe have concerns about the wrestling, but those concerns aside, I mean, Yuri, who was a much hyped fighter coming in, took on a guy in Ozdemir who was a top 10 light heavyweight, and he finished him. He looked great. And he certainly is going to just get bigger and bigger fights in this light heavyweight division. I mean, it's likely that I think he could beat, you know, Anthony Smith, Glover. I think he could struggle against Corey Anderson, against a fighter maybe who could wrestle with him, or a technical striker or a powerful striker that could take advantage of the defensive holes. He had real confidence in his chin throughout that fight. Real question marks when it comes to his hands being up and his chin being out. But the offense is lethal. It's dangerous. And Yuri, it wouldn't surprise me if this guy kind of just is able to piece together two knockout victories after this one, and then he gets that championship opportunity. But between these two fighters, it does seem like Amanda Ribas has much more staying power. I mean, she's just incredibly well-rounded. I think when you contrast her with Weili Zhang, Nama Yunus, Andrade, Ioane Andrejic, you look at that strawweight division that she's going to go back to compete in after this flyweight fight, I think the grappling of Amanda Ribas is probably what separates her from those fighters. And she has, to me, more long-term potential in that. I think she's going to be a part of that top five, and she's just going to stick around for a long time. Whereas Yuri might have a nice run right now, but maybe won't be around, you know, 3 years from now. Either way, both these fighters to me were the big time stars. It was them, and then also, you know, Rose Namajunas returned to form with a fight of the night against Jessica Andrade.
Yeah, and that's one of those other questionable judges' scorecards. I don't know how someone scored two rounds for Jessica Andrade. To me, very clear, round one, round two for Rose, round three for Andrade. I would imagine we're going Rose, Wiley. That to me would make all the sense in the world there in that one. By the way, speaking about Yuri, he is number 8 in the UFC rankings. So above him is Gustafsson, Anthony Smith, Glover Teixeira, Corey Anderson, Jan Blachowicz, Thiago Santos, Dominic Reyes, I would be all for him versus Johnny Walker. That would just be a fun fight to watch. I don't think from a rankings aspect that makes a lot of sense for Yuri right now. But, you know, and also I thought it was really weird because I want to say it was before 251 Dana was talking to the media. And he's not really commenting on what is the status of the UFC light heavyweight title.
Yeah. When you read the tea leaves, what do you think that means?
I think that at some point him and Team Jones come together and Hunter Campbell gets a deal done. But the fact of, you know, John Jones is still listed as the UFC light heavyweight champion. You know, they're booking, you know, top fights. You know, Thiago Santos is going to fight Glover Teixeira, you know, coming up. And so, you know, that's a fight that you got, you know, Błachowicz and Reyes sitting out there. Corey Anderson. I mean, like, when I think of Yuri's fighting abilities, you know, do I really want to see him fight Corey Anderson? If, you know, from an entertainment aspect, no, because Corey probably just sits there and takes him down. You know, Glover, I think, would try to get him to the ground. Him versus Anthony Smith would be fun. Of course, Smith's got a fight coming up. Him versus Thiago Santos, I think, would be fun. Him versus Dominic Reyes, I think, would be fun. So there's some fun matchups up there. You know, but, you know, Amanda Ribas, she's shown for personality, man. That's someone I think the UFC can build around. You know, in terms of the rest of the card, to kind of discuss. Oh, by the way, speaking of Jessica Andrade, she's sticking in Abu Dhabi just in case the UFC needs a backup fighter.
That's a smart way to make some money. Hey, man, if that's your job and you don't have you're chill with taking an extended vacation in Abu Dhabi, the United Arab Emirates, that's not a bad idea. While they're doing the fights at Fight Island, I mean, for her, I mean, that'd be a nice way to rebound. And we've seen fighters do it, even coming off losses. I think what's her name did it. Oh my gosh, she criticized Valerie Laredo for showing her butt on the internet.
Macy Chiesa?
Yeah, she lost two fights in a quick order, right? Am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think Macy did, no.
No, I could have sworn she fought. Let me double check what's going on here.
I think she lost one fight.
Oh, yeah, and then she... Oh, no, she did. She did. Who the heck am I thinking of? She's a female fighter. No, but it wasn't Macy Chiesa. It was somebody else.
I thought
Maybe I got Macy Chiesa. Who's the fighter who rides farm animals on her Instagram? Oh my gosh, she rides farm animals. She lost a big time fight. She's kind of awkward, which I am too. This is driving me absolutely nuts.
I am drawing a blank on this riding farm animals on her social media. I don't think it's Andrea Lee.
Oh, Hannah Cyphers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she did. She lost to she lost to Mackenzie Dern, and she lost to Maria Agapova. So Hannah Cyphers, I'm sorry for wrongly accusing Hannah Cyphers of accusing Valerie Laredo of posting, you know, videos establishing her assets. But yeah,
there's a lot of people who enjoy looking at Valerie Laredo's social media game.
That's true. That's true. Absolutely. And I will say this, though. I was just my brain was firing off when you were talking about John Jones. Maybe the dude is just getting ready for August and seeing if one of Stipe or DC pulls out, and then he can pull the Jorge Masvidal and just open up the money bag.
Bro. By the way, kudos to the UFC on that poster for that fight card. That was a pretty good poster.
Yeah, that, and I like the video game cover of Masvidal and Adesanya. The graphics look not good, but the video game cover is pretty cool. That would have been awkward for
I saw the trailer for the video game. I think it's cool, the whole backyard fighting thing. But why do they have gloves on?
That's true. Kimbo never fought in MMA with gloves. He didn't come out in Reebok shorts.
Dude, how many people roll up to a backyard fight with gloves on?
Yeah, and who has a cage in a backyard fight, too?
I didn't even think about that part. Now, that is a solid point, Daniel.
Yeah, like who has the fun? Like, if you're doing backyard fights, but you're like, but we need a cage. Like, it's like, damn, you making some questionable financial choices. But yeah, I mean...
And, and, the, Look, and if you're going to have the backyard fight, Daniel, there's got to be like the guy on the side taking the bets.
Yeah, that too. And you got to have guys, you know, with the phone camera recording. And I have no idea where the hell Israel Adesanya was fighting in his little thing. But yeah, that was questionable. By the way, just one other note about this card from my point of view. Dude, Roman Bogatov, like, someone's got to explain to him what the rules are, because he broke all of them in, like, round three against Leonardo Santos.
Bro, I felt so bad for Leonardo Santos's his third leg. I felt bad for him.
Not only his third leg, but his single head. I mean, he got hit in the nuts, like, multiple times. And dude's just chilling there. And Roman, after, like, getting warned multiple times, the referees being pretty conservative with him, all of a sudden, he hits that illegal knee, and it makes sense to take 2 points away. It's like, all right, like, I gave you multiple warnings. I gave you the benefit of the doubt, and that was just inexcusable.
Did you see the illegal knee in LFA?
I didn't.
Just Google Boston Salmon. It is all over everywhere. Boston Salmon gets Sean West was fighting him, and Sean West rocks him. Salmon falls to the ground. And Wes comes in, and right as Boston Salmon's attempting to get up, and he just doesn't time it right, and he knees Boston Salmon straight in the face as he's got one knee on the ground, and it was a brutal knockout. Brutal knockout, all caps.
Yeah, I'm watching it right now. I saw the screen capture. Oh, my God.
I shouldn't be laughing. But your response is pretty much, so I was watching this because I had interviewed Sean West before leading up to this one. I'm like, oh, let me, you know, I had nothing going on Friday night because not exactly going out and with the boys having beers because of COVID. So I was on the couch and I was like, holy, well, you probably know the next one that came out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's just brutal. Like, that's just straight up barbaric. Nothing's more unforgiving than the human body, especially when it's momentum going in a way that you don't expect it. I mean, it reminds me of the time, like just your body involuntarily going one direction and somebody else is going the other, results in things like that. I mean, it just looks like Boston Salmon looked like, God, it must have taken a long time to revive. And that's such a brutal knockout. Like that screen grab of his face with the blood going down. Oh, man, it doesn't get worse than that in terms of brutality.
Yeah, and those are two guys who used to train together in the past.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't look intentional, but...
No, it clearly was not intentional. He didn't time it right, but, man, that was a brutal one. And, yeah, Roman Bogatov, I mean, you could have easily DQ'd him in that one. I mean, that was a fight where Goddard let that thing in when... What was it? Second round when Santos is just teeing off on him. Bogatov's out on his feet. To me, he's out on his feet. And he let it keep going. And I remember when that was happening, I tweeted, like, if you're a fire in the back, you are taking note of Mark Goddard refereeing your fight, because, you know, he took a lot of crap from Colby Covington from the Kamaru Usman fight. I'm really wondering if that has had an effect on him.
Yeah, he's gotten really hard in the other direction. And it seems like it has, for sure. And I can't blame him. You're only human, right? Like, all of us are human. And Colby just continued to berate him. But it's a thing where it's a dangerous, dangerous decision to make, to let fights go longer because you were criticized for ending one early. And that's going to get guys hurt.
Now, I do got to say this. Congratulations if you had Davey Grant to win by TKO KO, Daniel. It was plus 1,500.
Wow. Wow. Imagine if you had that also in the third round. I think you would be a very rich man. That was the highlight of the early prelims, for sure.
Man, that was a devastating knockout. You got Martin Day now 0-2 in the UFC. Got to kind of wonder where he goes from there. Rosa gets a win over Melo. Decision win. It was a long night of fights. As I mentioned, I think it was just before 2 a.m. Eastern time when this thing finally wrapped up. But overall, a good night of fights. Of course, Daniel, that UFC train is rolling right back on this weekend. Or this week, I should say. Wednesday, we've got the fight night card headlined by Calvin Kattar and Dan Ige. There was a fight card, the opening fight of the night, the fight between Jorge Gonzalez and Kenneth Burr has been scratched. Burr was pulled from the event due to weight cut compilation. So the fight will go on forward. A couple of fighters did miss weight. Abdulrazik Al-Hassan missed weight by a couple pounds. Also, Chris Fishgold missed weight for a couple pounds. So those fights are going to continue. Crazy thing with Jared Gordon this week is the fact of because of COVID and what's happened, people around him, he went to Abu Dhabi with no corners. So the UFC is going to let Paul Felder, who's calling the fights on ESPN, to leave the broadcast booth for one fight so he can corner Jared Gordon.
Is that so? That I could not understand that article. So I couldn't tell if he was leaving for one fight or if he just wasn't going to commentate that night.
No, one fight. So he is going to call the rest of the fights that night. But that one fight, he will be all in suit cornering Jared Gordon.
Wow, unbelievable. I read that story and I was like, dang, that's craziness. And then somebody else is going to be with him, right? Because there's got to be someone
preparing. I believe it's the head coach of Extreme Couture who's already there.
He's with somebody else, right?
He's there with Dan Ige.
That's nice of him to do that, because like imagine preparing for a UFC fight just all by yourself. I guess it brings questions like, how the hell did his whole team do it test, but he didn't test positive, by the way, is like my question.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's obviously
is he doing Max Holloway Zoom training sessions?
Look, if Max Holloway truly did Zoom training sessions, I guess keep doing it. I guess, what we talk about, so we got Mike Perry with the girlfriend in his corner. You know, now we got Holloway with Zoom.
Although Mike Perry, I mean, Jesus Christ, he went off the deep end.
Okay, all right. How about Dana White going, oh, yeah, I saw this thing coming. Then why didn't you try to help this dude before it happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look, have the warning signs there been on Mike Perry? Yes. Very disturbing video. Disturbing is about the only way I can put it.
Yeah, it's like, it's definitely a fireable offense. I mean, you're a public figure. When he touched his girlfriend, it's not great. What he said, it's awful. You hope that this is something he can rebound from, obviously. Things like that are demons that a lot of us deal with. And, it's a rough, rough, rough deal there. And you just really hope that he gets help, because, like, that behavior is literally, like, not acceptable in any form or fashion.
By the way, when all this went down, someone created a poster for Mike Perry. It said, McGregor versus Perry, World Elderweight Championship.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, UFC fighters got to stop fighting old people. Like, for the love of God, just leave them alone. Like, it's already been a rough year for old people, and it's just not a good look for Conor and these guys to be taking on, the greatest generation.
By the way, speaking of another just hilarious tweet that I saw, so this was before, I want to say I saw this on Friday. It was, the caption was, text exchange I just had with my brother. I'm already in fight night mode. So his brother texts him, goes, by the way, the baptism thing is on Saturday at 11. Then there is a lunch. So I probably would get up to dad's by 3-ish. He responds to his brother going, the only one getting baptized on Saturday is Usman, bro.
Yeah, I love that. That's some good stuff.
Dude, in today's world, we need that kind of comedy.
Yeah, the world is rough. Who the hell's doing a baptism now in this type of day and age? Like I know kids got to get baptized, right? Like, you got to do, I'm Catholic. I know about baptizing, but like really, you're going to let that preacher touch your son or your daughter and put him in water or whatever? Like, come on, dude, do it with gloves on. That's interesting. I was just thinking about the coronavirus the other day. Like I'm lucky right now, because I'm young, and chances are if I get it, I'll be all right. But like, I'm only going to be young one time in my life. Like, God willing, I'll be old one day. And that'd be really crappy if like all the young people, acted poorly and put my life in danger. I just had that thought. I'm like, I'm young now, but I'm not going to be young eventually. And so I just thought, all you selfish young people,
going out there and doing stuff selfishly. Stop it. Stop it. All right. I know I had my friend over to watch the UFC, but my friend Micah, is a great dude, and all he does is just chill in his room playing video games. So he wins a social distancing championship. Other than that, I'm being a good boy.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a couple weeks ago. I was talking to Grant Dawson, who fights on Saturday, and one of the things he said to me, he's like, "Man, you think about the younger generation, the two biggest stories of our generation would be 9/11." And now the coronavirus, to where we're going to be that, 67-year-old guy going, back in my day when the world shut down because of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something that's going to be written in the history books that generations and generations now are going to hear about.
Yeah, totally. I mean, hopefully we're able to write history books. I mean, who knows what else is going to happen in 2020. Like we might get like a alien invasion, volcanoes erupt. We might not even have an opportunity to write a history book at the rate we're going. We're barely halfway through the year. But yeah, I think what this year taught us, and it's a very important lesson, is just to never take things for granted. I think we took our way of life for granted. And, I'm a very optimistic person. I mean, I think there are a lot of wrong things going on in the world. I think people are too polarized. I think stuff like that isn't great. I think social media can just be awful dumpster fire. But I think people are mostly good. And I think this has taught us to value our daily lives, our regular lives, and our family. And so I guess that's the silver lining.
Dude, I was surprised that... So I have basically been using this pandemic of saying, what do we need to get fixed around the house? Because we might be able to get a good price on it. So I was like, we need to replace our fence. So I'm like, get a fence company out. They do the estimate. Call them on Monday. I was like, hey, let's go ahead. Let's do this. And the guy's like, all right, I can get you 3 weeks from today. And I'm like, wow, I guess you guys are kind of busy.
Yeah, I think people are looking around their house and like, what do I need to repair and fix? Yeah, I think this. Yeah, I think it's like we're just chilling. Like we're just trying to fix things now because like people are just chilling in their house, and whether it be themselves or their house doing chores or figuring things out, it makes sense. It's good to see businesses booming in that aspect.
By the way, I lost my internet for 2 days last week at home.
Yeah,
I was a little lost.
I know you got to start reading a book,
bro. You don't realize how much things around your house are tied to the internet until it goes down for a day or 2 days in my case.
It's kind of sick the amount of time we spend in front of screens. Like the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep, it's a screen. And if it's not a screen, it's an earphone in our ear. Bro, if we go outside, we have to have earphones on.
It was the first time we have watched a DVD and I don't know how long.
That's amazing. That's one of the things I love the fact that you can watch everything like online, but I miss like going to a store and buying a DVD, just that physical DVD. I mean, it's super inconvenient compared to the fact that I can Google like any movie that ever came out and watch it within 25 seconds. But, I do miss having DVDs. Like growing up, I saw people with like epic DVD cases. I'm like, one day I'm gonna get a job and I'm gonna have a great DVD collection, a great VHS collection. And now that's just irrelevant.
Bro, in our bedroom, we've got like this big entertainment center and it's got all these just DVDs. All these DVDs. And yeah, do I ever open those things up? Nope. Nope.
No.
No reason
to. Half of them are probably on Netflix and the other half are on other streaming services.
Oh, totally. I actually the show I've been binge watching is The Shield that was on FX.
Oh, that's a long one, right?
I never watched it. So we got Hulu, and so I'm like, looking through, it can kind of like some of these streaming services, it can be overwhelming. They're like, hey, we think you like this show, and you just go down a rabbit hole of various things of watching. And so I was like, hey, let me watch that, and, it's a Kurt Sutter show. Love what he wrote for Sons of Anarchy. So started watching that, man. But yeah, I mean, look, like, Wednesday night, I'll be watching the UFC. Saturday night, I'll be watching the UFC. You know, look, the Wednesday night card, I mean, is it a sexy card on paper? Not necessarily. You know, I look at the Calvin Kattar, Dan Ige fight. I expect Calvin Kattar to win. I mean, I don't see, and look, I can also be proven wrong. I don't see how Dan Ige can win this fight if he can't get to the ground. I think he has to get to the ground. He can't make this a boxing matchup. If he makes this a boxing matchup, I think Calvin will piece him apart on the feet and will finish him within, you know, 15 minutes or so. You know, look, Tim Elliott is always a fun fighter to watch. I think it's just in his DNA, he can't have a boring fight. Jimmy Rivera versus Cody Stamann, you know, that'll be at 145 pounds. Of course, 235ers, they took this fight last week. The crazy thing on Jimmy Rivera is I pulled up his bio the other day, and first fight in 13 months. Of course, you know, you look at his UFC losses, they're against you know, the who's who of the 135 pound division: Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling, Marlon Moraes. His last win came September 8th, 2018 against John Dodson. His last stoppage win, Daniel, would have been in his UFC debut in 2015 against Marcus Brimage.
Wow. That's a long time. That's a very, very long time. And I know he's a slight favorite, but he's got a tough matchup against Cody Stamann. I mean, Stamann's going to earn a bantamweight title fighting entirely at featherweight at this point. Just it's unbelievable. You feel, you know, for him. We experienced so much emotion the last time he fought. The week of, his brother passed away, and here he is coming back, and kind of root for him almost. It's hard not to when a man faces so much adversity in his life, and you also kind of got to root for Jimmy, who hasn't fought in a while, and he's a crafty guy. That's a great fight. That's the number two fight on that card, absolutely. Other than that, man, like, I'm pretty excited about seeing Khamzat Chimaev. I think he's pretty dang good.
He is going to take John Phillips to takedown city.
Yeah, that's
John
true.
John Phillips did not stop a takedown.
yeah. It's I think that's good. I tell you what, Jack Shore is going to be pretty exciting to watch.
Mm-hmm. There's some guys I think on the card that interested to kind of see as a future grows, but I think in terms of fights, you know, it's Kattar, Ige, Rivera, Stamann. Man, I don't even know. Fishkill Gordon might be my number three, just because I think it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, that one. I mean, the Tim Elliott fight's going to be exciting too. Like, those are it. I mean, it's a shallow card. I mean, if you mix and match the best fights from both fight cards, you're going to have a really stacked card. But other than that, you won't.
I like the Saturday card overall more than the Wednesday card, but when you look at this whole situation with the Saturday's main event between Davison Figueiredo and Joseph Benavidez, like, I really wonder what Joseph Benavidez, his team around him, his wife, all kind of think about taking on a guy that, you know, had COVID 2 months ago, then apparently had a positive test a week ago that they're saying now appears to be was a false positive, because then he got a negative test back. He's flying into Abu Dhabi, getting to Abu Dhabi on Tuesday night. He's got to wait on Friday, U.S. time. And his manager is saying that he's walking around 10 pounds lighter this one. Like, if you're Joseph Benavidez, the last week has probably just been a crazy week for him. He's sitting there going, okay, am I fighting Davison Figueiredo? Am I fighting Andre Pantoja, who's on this card taking on Askarov? Like, it's a weird position for Joseph Benavidez.
Yeah, it is. And not only the if I'm going to, but do I want to? Would you want to get in the cage with a guy who's had the disease, who had the virus, and a week ago tested positive for it? Like, I think for me, the answer would be no. But for Joseph Benavidez, I mean, it's just a great, great chance for him to win a championship. This was possibly his last chance. And I guess he's kind of throwing that aside, throwing his potential caution aside, trusting in the process, even though there are a lot of reasons why you shouldn't. And I guess he's got to have tunnel vision, but the focus has got to be there. But the distractions are also on the Figueiredo side. I mean, how do you prepare for a fight if you have COVID-19? How do you do it if you test positive for COVID-19? I mean, all those things and the preparation to it, in addition to the fly and the travel and whatnot, that's a concern for a guy who, after their first fight, was clearly the better fighter. Now, who knows? There's a lot of balls in the air with this main event.
Well, I mean, if the headbutt doesn't happen in the first fight, does it change the fight? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think after we watched that fight, like, our thoughts were pretty similar. It was like, there's no need for a rematch. That was our thoughts, I thought. But I could see a scenario where Benavidez wins here. I could now. There's a lot of different things, and the headbutt was another one that could have maybe colored what happened in that fight, because it was a convincing win for Figueiredo. So, I mean, I'm excited for the fight for sure. It's a solid fight night card. Like, Kelvin Gastelum, Jack Hermanson, like, that's a solid fight. Pantoja fighting is great against Askar Askarov. It was smart to book them there. I would be interested to see what happens if Figueiredo misses weight again. I feel like if he misses weight again, you almost pull him out of the fight so you can crown a damn champion and put Pantoja in there.
That's the thing for Pantoja. You're sitting there going, I got to make 125. I can't make 126. I got to make 125.
Yeah. If I was a UFC, I would do that. I would absolutely do that. Like at some point you want to crown a champion and you're frustrated with the guy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I would say the other fight on this card that I really like, it's on the prelims, and that's Brett Johns versus Montel Jackson.
Yeah, that is a good fight, man. I mean, Montel's exciting. Brett Johns finally put it together against Tony Gravely, and that was a hell of a fight, dude. Like, Brett Johns is in some exciting contests. I mean, Johns Jackson is good. You mentioned you talked to Grant Dawson. I mean, he's got a solid catchweight fight against Nad Nirmani. And, you know, I think Mark Diakis is generally exciting. He's on the main card. I'm obviously between these two fight cards. It's a no-brainer. I mean, Saturday is much better.
Yeah, no question. By the way, Dana White had an interesting comment on Tuesday when he was asked about some future event locations with everything that's going on in our world.
Nevada shut down. California shut down today again. Are you concerned about the Vegas shows?
Yes.
You are? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a backup plan for that?
Thinking about it now. I mean, my backup plan would be Fight Island. You know, I might be living here.
Is it doable to do all those events here, the August ones? Is it possible to bring those events here next month?
Anything is possible. If Nevada shuts down and doesn't allow us to do fights in Nevada, yeah, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Abu Dhabi.
Daniel, I wonder if there is someone potentially rooting for the next pay-per-view to get moved to Abu Dhabi.
Well, maybe people in the media, but also maybe, like, you know, the rich people in Abu Dhabi. Maybe that's the big conspiracy theory, is they're gonna talk to legislators and they're gonna get it so they get all the UFC for themselves. But I'm sure that's the case. Like,
You didn't get where I'm going with this one.
What's that? Where are you going with? I didn't pick up on what you're throwing down.
The next pay-per-view will be in Vegas. It'll be in a 25-foot cage. If you're Stipe Miocic, do you want to fight Daniel Cormier in a 25-foot cage or a 30-foot cage?
Yeah. You avoid the wrestling. You know, you want the bigger cage, right? Like,
yeah,
I will say this
clearly.
I mean, hey, Masvidal could have been in a 50-foot cage. That wouldn't have changed nothing. But this fight card did not – this past fight card we saw did not really help the idea that the cages don't matter. The cages do matter. This fight card was worse than the smaller cage shows. I just think we got to do away with the bigger cage. It's crazy, by the way. It's absolutely crazy that there are different size cages in the sport. Like, I know baseball fields are different sizes, but that's because, like, they made baseball fields, like, a long time ago. Except for the Texas Rangers, they have to bleed money from the government every 10 years to get a new baseball field. But other than them, I get why baseball fields are like that. I do think it's insane that the UFC does not have a consistently sized cage. I don't get
it. if you told me we got to pick one size cage and that's the cage we use for all of UFC events, give me the 25-foot cage.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Give me the 25-foot cage. It's been the star of I mean, the 25-foot cage has been one of like, the top three stars of this pandemic situation. I think when this is all said and done, we should probably do like a power ranking of like top five fights that we wish happened in front of a crowd. Because I miss crowd. I'm like, damn, I can't believe we're seeing Stipe DC in front of an empty arena.
Here's the thing, I'm gonna give UFC a lot of credit. They have marketed UFC Fight Island tremendous. They've done a great job. But man, watching that event on Saturday night, you just felt like it's another UFC event. Like we couldn't like put like you know some sand and kind of make it look like pretty cool with the fighters walking out.
Yeah, I think like I saw a video today of it was Joseph Valtellini training like on Fight Island, like on the beach or something. I'm not really sure where that cage was set up, but. That looked dope.
Yeah, there's a cage basically outside the hotel. But when you watch any of these, you know, Instagram lives that you see fighters doing, they're basically talking about, yeah, you really don't want to go outside. So it's so hot. The thing that I don't think I could do, you know, is the 48-hour quarantine in your hotel room. That to me, like, man, I better have my Xbox with me, have the Nintendo Switch with me, man. You know, have good Wi-Fi because... Man, that's a long time to be stuck in a hotel room.
I could do it, but I could do it with like a 24-pack of beer, a bunch of chips, some Gatorades. Like, I'm going to get drunk one night and recover the sex, and then I'll be ready to go. And when I get drunk, I'm going to watch a lot of movies. Like, that's the only way I could do it, because other than that, I'd go crazy.
You need the Gatorade for the morning to get over the hangover.
Yeah, well, yeah, you need one Gatorade to drink before you go to sleep and one when you wake up. You got to get those electrolytes in before you go to sleep.
Oh, no. Anyone who is known to partake, they definitely know what you're talking about, Daniel. You know, some other news from over the past week, Venom's going to replace Reebok as the official outfitting partner of the UFC. Going to be interesting to see how that looks. I would imagine since Venom is a combat sports company that they're probably going to have some better equipment for the fighters.
Yeah, it'll probably go better than Reebok. Reebok was bad. It was a bad deal. It just was. Like, I know they gave them money, but like in terms of the actual product, it wasn't great. It just looked like it just looked like the dudes in the Reebok MMA section were mailing it in at work. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff that was great or interesting, and it's been the same after so many years. I mean, when the original fighter kits came out, it was already like, that's it. And so overall, it's a pretty big F on the Reebok era when it comes to just stuff I personally would want to buy. There are zero things I have purchased from the UFC that have the word Reebok on it. So hopefully Venom changes that.
Yeah, I was on the UFC store last week, and because I thought that the Fight Island poster they did, the cartoon one they did, I thought was really cool. They were selling it for $50. I don't even know if you can still order it or not. I thought about buying it. I didn't pull the trigger on it. But then I was just kind of browsing around, you know, things on the store, and I was just like, yeah, man, I think the biggest issue with the Reebok was it was price awful.
Yeah, right off the gate, it was a really bad taste in the mouth. It's like, damn, you're going to charge this much for this type of product? Are you kidding me? Are you insane? And the price point, in addition to the product, was just rough. Like, I will spend that much money for a retro Hakeem Olajuwon jersey, but not a Conor McGregor fighter kit. Yeah, so, like, I mean, there's a lot of lessons to be learned for
if
Venom.
If you want a UFC Fight Island pint glass, Daniel, $30.
It's insane. It's insane.
Like, it looks cool and everything, but I'm like, am I going to fork over $30 for that? I could. I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I'd feel good about it.
Yeah. No person in their right mind would. I mean, it's just way too expensive for a product that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just okay. Yeah, I mean, it's Yeah, because like I've been looking to get some wall art for my office, in my home office, and so like I'm like, oh, I want, you know, for some of, you know, the various you know, MMA shows I do, I'm like, oh, let me try to find something, and just like I don't want to, like, I'm like, I don't want an autographed poster. I don't really care for that. But yeah, you can get the Fight Island poster of Masvidal and Usman. It's a really cool poster. I like when the UFC does like these cartoon posters. It's $50. I might still pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, yeah. I could. I'm looking at it now, and I kind of dig it too.
They have another Fight Island poster. It's $30. Not as good. Not as good.
Yeah, yeah.
Not as good.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get something that's kind of like a memento of this time. Very unique time and, you know, very unique time.
So we'll wrap this up talking about Bellator. As we do this show, it's not been officially announced by Bellator, but it sounds like news is going to come out any day now since fights are now being reported on by the media about Bellator doing events at Mohegan. The two dates that's been reported so far, July 24th, August 7th. Some two reported matchups that are out there. August 7th card having Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson. July 24th card having Ricky Bandejas versus Sergio Pettis. Sign me all up for especially Pettis versus Bandejas. Really, really interested in that matchup. But, you know, the one thing is, and I saw Adam Martin tweet about this the other day, because I want to say he wrote a story for BJPenn.com about the July 24th event. And he's like, basically said, he's like, man, this story is getting no clicks. And I was just like, man, I think that's very telling about Bellator. I mean, look, they're going to, you know, because of what they're going to have to do with no fans in attendance, it's going to be loaded up cards, Daniel. But it's going to be interesting to see if fans are intrigued by these cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's something where, you know, the stove is cold. The stove is cold and it's probably going to take a little bit to warm up because they just haven't been a part of the conversation for a long time. And, you know, immediately I thought the response from Bellator was great. They shut things down. But maybe the amount of time it took to start things back up in relation to how the UFC has kind of just kept things chugging along has been a negative for Bellator. But even though things are cold now, my opinion is that if they start running consistently, they'll heat back up. If they start putting together stacked, entertaining cards, people will start talking about it. But currently, interest in the Bellator product is at a pretty low point, just given that there has been nothing to discuss as it relates to them.
Since I now have Paramount Network part of YouTube TV, I guess I don't need DAZN, so I guess it'll be interesting to see if we get DAZN exclusive events for Bellator.
Yeah, I think that's... DAZN needs something, you know. It's a tough time to be DAZN. There just isn't. When live sports took a pause in action, I mean, that basically killed DAZN's business. Can you imagine paying for a subscription for DAZN that first month of the pandemic?
I canceled my. At that point, I was about to have to pull the trigger because the grandfather price I had was expiring. So I was going to have to pull the trigger. I was just going to pay for the year, $100. And when the Bellator event got canceled, I'm like, well, there's not going to be a Bellator event for at least another 2 months. I just canceled my subscription, and I've had no reason to order DAZN. Now with YouTube TV having Paramount, even though, man, they added 8 Viacom channels to YouTube TV, Daniel, $15 more a month I got to pay.
Wow.
And they're not optional. So YouTube TV is now $64.99 a month. When I got it, Daniel, you know, two and a half, 3 years ago, $35 a month.
It's how they get you hook, line, and sinker. They get you in that good price, and they slowly but surely bring that price up.
Bro, but then I'm like, it's like it is not cheaper to be a cord cutter anymore. It's not.
You know, It's definitely not, but that's how the world goes. At first, you're like, hey, you know, it's really cheap. And then all of a sudden, you look at your wallet and they have all your money.
Here's the only advantage about being a cord cutter, Daniel, is I can put the TV wherever I want in my living room. It doesn't have to be next to a coax cable.
Yeah, that is the advantage. Yeah, I mean, I mean when I think of like how the advantage of things like that in life are like flexibility and stuff like that. It's amazing to me. I don't know if you saw that Quibi thing when they first launched that new streaming network, Quibi. I believe the only way you could watch it was on your phone. Like that was a part of their selling point when like in life, all we care about is flexibility. But yeah, Quibi was like this thing that like they invested a lot of money in with this huge launch. All these new shows are like 10-minute shows. I don't know how much you've been reading about it, but
I'm aware of it, but I haven't checked it out or even looked into it. It's just because like I don't watch a ton of TV. My wife watches a ton of TV because she's not working right now because of school being out. So she just sits there and watches Hulu all day long.
Yeah, you guys got to watch the movie called Palm Springs. I saw that one. It came out on Hulu last week with Andy Samberg, and I think her name's Kristen Milioti. So that's a good one for you guys to watch. It's like Groundhog Day, kind of.
Okay.
Maybe I screwed that up. I shouldn't have told you it was like Groundhog Day. All right, forget I told you. Forget it's like I knew it was like Groundhog Day before I saw it, so it kind of ruined the beginning, but. That was a fun watch on Hulu. It's just cool to like have a subscription to these things, and they just produce like quality TV shows and movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things of like when my internet went out last week, I'm all pissed off, and like I start pricing out other TV cable companies, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, there is not much I'm not really got a much cheaper option out there.
I know. It's it comes and it goes, man. You get that initial deal, and sooner or later they're gonna get the money back, and that's what they're doing. But now you have no choice. I mean, where else are you gonna go?
I know. It's the world we live in, man. I just need my live sports. That's all I ask for. Like literally, if you give me a TV package of ESPN and the Fox Sports regional channels, I think I'm good.
Yeah, if I can watch NBA, if I can watch MLB, if I can watch hockey and football and college football and college sports, you give me all those plus my combat sports and a little bit of professional wrestling, I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, man. It's but it's a busy week for me. You know, got the shows on Awesomeo this week for the Wednesday fight card, also the Saturday fight card. So busy week for me. Anything else you want to discuss before we get out of here?
Not much, man. I just can't wait to discuss what we got going on this upcoming week. Again, I'm grateful that we can talk about this given the tough times. I hope everyone listening is doing well. I know this is just an incredibly tough time for all of us, and we will persevere. We will get through this, and the present may suck, but the future will be great.
Yeah, let's hope we get back half of 2020 can be a little better. That's what we can definitely hope for. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, it comes out every Wednesday. RadioInfluence.com. Be sure to head over to the MMAReport.com. Got a bunch of interviews up there. You can see my interview with John Castaneda, who's going to make his UFC debut next week. Also, talk to Jonathan Martinez, Chris Gutierrez, Peter Barrett, Steve Garcia, among others. Going to start some contender series interviews coming up this week. Going to be talking to Kevin Seiler, Jordan Williams. So be on the lookout on that on themmareport.com. Also, be sure to give the MMA Report hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeart, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn. Also, be sure to hit that subscribe button on YouTube as we're putting new content up there pretty much every day. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome my guest at this time. She is a five-time knockout champion. She is Madison Rain.
At that time, I watched the show. Like I knew what the beautiful people was. At the time, they had Kip with them. Cute Kip was right. his moniker at TNA, and I knew that fashion. I knew how successful they were, and I had met Angelina a couple of times prior to having my tryout. So I knew her, but I mean, they were both very welcoming and open to the idea. You know, it's hard to have this super successful team. And like you said, they've got their entrance. Like, how do you add a third body to that, like, super popular, like, what would end up being iconic entrance?
Sure.
So, you know, there were some things that needed to be ironed out. But I also think another thing that helped me in those early months was my ignorance. It was bliss, right? And I didn't know. I mean, I knew it was a huge opportunity, but at 23 years old, like, I just didn't grasp how big that was going to be for me, or how solid of a foundation that would lay for what would be my television career.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.